blue. Said, you wanna walk me home from school? Well, I said, yes, I do. She said, I don't have to go right home, and I would kinda like to be alone, son. You would. I said, me too. And so we took a stroll, wound up down by the swimming hole, and she said, do what you wanna do. I got silly and found a frog in the water by a hollow log, and I shook it at her. And I said, this frog's for you. She said,
I don't like spiders and snakes, and that ain't what it takes to love me. I don't like spiders and snakes, and that ain't what it takes to love me. Like I wanna be loved by you.
Ain't you cool? Said, do you remember when, and would you like to get together again? She said, I see you after school. I was shy and so for a while, most of my love was touching smiles. And she said, come on over here. I was nervous as my guest, still looking for something to slip down her dress. And she said, let's make it perfectly clear. She said,
I don't like spiders and snakes, and that ain't what it takes to love me.
You fool, you fool.
I don't like spiders and snakes, and that ain't what it takes to love me. Like I wanna be loved by you.
We continue getting to know the amazingly talented Jim Stafford. Wow. Famous for Cow Patty. Spiders and Snakes. When you meet the man upstairs, you go, what did you do with your life, James? Here's your mother and father. You're reunited now. What did you do with your life? Actually, you gave a lot of joy. You know, even in the scriptures, it says a merry heart maketh good like medicine. And I bet you that's why your shows were always sold out there in Branson. Make people laugh.
I really had a good time there. But I tell you the truth, I had a good time my whole career, and I had fun playing the little joints on the beach, and I did a lot of work on the West Coast and the Clearwater, Tampa, St. Pete, Sarasota, all down in there, Venice down all in there, and lots of nice little spots there, to work on the beach. So I had a lot of fun, and I was fortunate enough to get into in some national success, and I got to meet people I might never have gotten to meet and be around people that
you were on national TV on the Smothers Brothers a number of times.
I was the writing supervisor for the Smothers Brothers.
You were?
Yeah, I was a regular on that show. And
did you partake is that just or did you just put it to your lips and nod in hell?
Back then, everybody seemed to be partaking of something. And
I'm a Woodstock boy. I was at Woodstock.
And so they were just great, 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 great.
Who did you get to meet? That, like, if I could meet anybody in the world, I'd like to meet Bob Dylan. Did you get to meet Bob Dylan?
I was in a bank line. I was standing behind a short, white-haired guy who looked familiar. I tapped him on the shoulder and said, excuse me, are you in show business? He turned around and said, I am Mo.
Mo?
Yeah, Mo and Larry and Curly.
No.
Yeah, I met Mo.
Wow.
Yeah, and he told me a joke.
Did
one of the Three Stooges told me a joke. Now, that's pretty cool.
That is super cool. And I understand that later on, if he's the one that invested in land and actually was pretty a prosperous guy later in life.
Nice.
And you met him at the bank. He was bringing in the sacks.
Met him at the bank.
They were brilliant, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. I met Groucho.
You met Groucho Marx?
Yeah, and another guy that I had a nice chat with was Edgar Bergen.
Yeah, the guy with the thing that sat on the ventriloquist.
And John Lennon. And you got Ringo Starr.
Did you?
Yeah.
Now, did you get
Ringo
to have
says, you and Billy Swan are cutting all my songs. You know, he wanted to cut some of these. He said, you're cutting songs I could have had hits on.
Yeah.
You know, Billy, remember that what song he had? That was I Can Help. Remember that?
I can help. Yeah.
And I took a plane ride, accidentally sat down for a long time with anything you want, you got it.
Anything you need. It'll come back to us. Oh, you meant
Roy Orbison.
Roy Orbison?
Yeah, my brain
you
came
got
back.
To me,
yeah.
Roy. What a phenomenal songwriter.
Yeah, and I was. I opened. Oh, wait till you hear this one. I'm working up in Hamburg at some New Jersey, I think, or New York, somewhere up in there. State college.
Hamburg, New Jersey.
And I'm opening for a guy. I had one record. I had just that Swamp Witch thing, the talking song. And so I'm working for this guy, and I kept saying, what is with this guy? I never heard of him. I don't know who he is. But he's got roadies. He's got a big old band. And, you know, something's going on here. Because how do unknown people have all this stuff? You know, and it was a high-quality band, everything. You know, I knew something was up. And so anyhow, it was Bruce Springsteen.
Really?
Yeah. A nice man. Came over for a little visit and, you know, looked at my gear, and we had a nice little chat.
I hear he's a nice guy. Do you want to hear a cool story?
Yeah.
A couple came from England. They're a poor, hardworking, blue-collar. All their life, they love Bruce Springsteen. They come into New York City. They get nosebleed tickets. He's playing Madison Square Garden. They get off the elevator, and there's a man standing there. He says, may I please see your color of your sticker around your, whatever you call that, the band? He says, well, would you please take that off? I'm a friend of Mr. Springsteen's, and we're going to give you this other band. Please go downstairs. They'll show you what to do. Front row seats, and he does this.
How did
often.
He know about him?
Because they just get off, and he says, you know, they're up in the nosebleed. So he's waiting there, and they're specifically supposed to pick out people that are in the nosebleed, and they get to come down and sit in the front seat. Now, is that kind?
That's a nice thing.
What a sweetheart.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, Paul McCartney, those front row seats go for $4,000 each now. Yeah. I don't know what they go for Springsteen. But
I heard that the Eagles were the first group to charge $500 for a front row seat back a long time ago. And that's what got that whole
But they're fine craftsmen,
started.
Aren't they?
Excellent. Whew. Excellent, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no explaining those guys.
So when you've met a lot of these very famous, very successful
individuals. I got to play with a lot of them, too. I got to play on the road. And I played with such a variety of people. Okay, here's two nights in a row that I played, okay? Night one. The Earl Scruggs Review. Night two, Ike and Tina Turner.
Wow. You know?
So that kind of back-to-back kind of stuff would happen a lot with me.
Do you notice any sort of, like, I would say from, like, you know, interviewing presidents and people like that, that there is a definite thread of an essential humility? And I think you can be famous, and I think you can have an ego and want to be in the spotlight like a guy like you, but there still is a basic humility. I see that thread. Is there some sort of – did you see that thread in the people that – you know, meaning they're teachable, flexible, you know, pliable, meek?
Pretty much all the time, yeah. Yeah, I think that sometimes people – you know, it seems to me like – from my experiences, that people a lot of times around a person change more than the person does when they have some success.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden members of their family are demanding things and sending steaks back and stuff. You know?
And we can't send anything back because they'll say, he's a prima donna spitting that, Al.
Yeah. And so I that seems to be kind of how it is. Most of these people are really nice people.
I got to meet probably a guy who's a good friend of yours last year, but they're making a motion picture, and I got to meet the director. He's the guy that directed the Johnny Cash movie, and he's doing this film. It's a documentary on Glenn Campbell. And he's given permission, he and his wife. And, of course, I pulled her aside, and I said, I just want to say that, and I never met her before, and I said, I honor you, I applaud you. That you would stick by his side during this, you know, Alzheimer's thing, and that they both gave permission, and they're filming from A to Z all the way from the beginning to the end, his experience with Alzheimer's, and they're trying to get a lot of funding. And
I know Glenn very well, and matter of fact, when he did his world tour, one of the first places he played was back in Branson, and he stayed at my house that night. And I've stayed at his house a few times too, and we've known each other for years and years. And I saw in one of the magazines the other day. I haven't been in much contact with him because he wouldn't know who I was. I know.
No.
His family is having to get him in, around the clock care.
But he was a guitar picker like you. I mean,
it's kind of
intricate workings.
Yeah, he's gone. But somebody told me this, that on his worst day, on the day that he doesn't know anybody, he plays his guitar.
Yeah.
He can still play the guitar. Is that amazing?
Is that outrageous?
He can still play. And boy, can he play guitar.
Yeah.
Wonderful player. And all natural. As a matter of fact, I would have to say, without any question at all, and kids are talented too. He's got a daughter named Ashley. This is great.
Yeah, they were here. They performed his daughter and son together up on the stage.
Yeah. And
very talented. Very nice people too. Humble.
Yeah. He's probably the best combo that I can think of.
And what do you mean by combo?
Performer, singer, session guy, guitar player. You know,
he started off as a session guy.
Because he played guitar great and sang great. And I don't know. I'm trying to think of somebody else that does that. I guess, you know who does that? Of course, a newer guy.
Paisley or something like that?
Brad Paisley.
Brad Paisley. It took two of us, but we got it.
Yeah, it took us two. Yeah. But, you know, that guy can really play.
Yes, he
really is a fine guitar player. Yeah. I forgot all about him. He's good.
Now, are you still writing Jim Scalpert?
Glenn, boy, the way he sings. Yeah. As a matter of fact, if you want to hear Glenn to take your breath away, of all things, check out his Christmas album sometime. Oh, my goodness. Anyhow, what were you saying?
Are you still writing? Do you still, I mean, in today's world, like you said, one good thing, I don't know if we said this on the air, we were just talking during the break, but the internet now has given the power back to the artist, because there's a lot of jerks that come into the business, and greed runs them. Well, we got him, and he's all dressed in white, now find me five new artists that are dressed in white, we want five new, I don't know how anything ever morphs or changes, but things do change. And so now with the internet changing, giving the power back to the artists, true artists like yourself, are you still writing? Because you don't know. Moses didn't get used till the guy was 80. Your best song could be still to come.
Well, people say the internet is the best and worst thing that ever happened, but I really like the internet. I love the possibilities, and I especially in entertainment, and I love to see. You know, anytime you want to, you can go in there and see a 14-year-old kid that just can play guitar unbelievably. And you see such miraculous things on the internet every day. So I love it. And I like I've got a room set up, at home, and I've got a black backdrop, and I've got my guitar, you know, and so I'm beginning to develop these pieces and do them on the internet. But what's so great about that is that the internet really makes you think about presentation. And you say, well, I don't want to just sit here on the couch and play something. I want to figure out how to present this.
Make it interesting visually.
Make it interesting. So the internet is making everybody think about what they're doing. And that's just a great thing.
We're going on, as of the next 2 weeks, we have a whole new website, and we're going to have cameras. At each mic is going to be a holder. You come in here, put your camera here, then you log on, and it goes onto the site. So your camera will be always on you, mine. So we had 3-4 people in here. Everyone will be on the site. Everything's changing.
Yeah, that's exciting, though, what I'm talking about.
Now,
exciting.
The bad news about the internet is they haven't figured the money thing out, because songwriters now are not always being compensated. There are a lot of kids that know how to steal stuff. That's not good, because as the scripture says, every labor is worthy of his due. So I don't know how this will, when the dust settles, I guess.
Well, here's the thing. If you or I go on that internet and we have something that pops, something that goes viral or whatever they call it, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about the rest of it. I mean, that would be so exciting,
yeah.
You know, and we would be so busy and so crazy and so happy that I wouldn't worry about the rest of
it. A lot of people are starting to give away the music, and what you do is you pay to see them live, so they're making the money that way. Yeah. Did you hear this, though, that the record companies now know that the artists are making the most money from T-shirts? Like, I know Garth was doing about $150,000 a night on his T-shirts when he was on tour. So now they're saying, well, we're going to sign you up, but we want 50% of your T-shirt sales. That's what these guys are doing, these thieves in the record companies. But anyway, let's stay positive. Could you please pick up the guitar and, I don't know, Cow Patty or Wild Weed?
Okay.
That's what got you on working with the Smothers Brothers initially, wasn't it? The song about marijuana?
I actually worked on the second Smothers Brothers show. You see, the first one was in the 60s before I had any of my songs. My songs were in the 70s. But the Smothers Brothers came back and did the new Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour on CBS in 1988.
Well, that was after they got kicked off and then came back on.
They came back, yeah.
People listening now go, what'd they get kicked off for? Well, because they were very controversial for that time. You were controversial with My Girl Bill. I mean, could you do a little bit of that one, too?
Well, the Smothers Brothers, that whole thing is kind of interesting. I hear, by the way, that George Clooney has bought the rights to their story, and he's going to make a Smothers Brothers movie.
Oh,
I hope that's true. That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
It'd be nice if they got to play it, though.
Yeah.
Those guys are fun. I had lunch with them a number of years ago, like 30 years ago, and upset here. But anyway, go ahead. My Girl Bill?
Let me do a little bit of both of them.
Okay, whatever you want.
Bill walked me to my door last night, and he said, before I go, there's something about our love affair I have a right to know. And I said, now, Bill, let's not stand out here like this. What would the neighbors think? Why don't we just step inside and I'll fix us both a drink? My girl, Bill. My girl, Bill. I can't say enough about the way I feel about my girl. My girl, Bill. I'll cut to the chase. I said, Bill, you know we just left her place. We both know what she said. She said she doesn't want to see your face. And she wishes you were dead. I know we both love her. And I guess we always will. But you're gonna have to find another. 'Cause she's my girl, Bill.
Yeah, my girl, comma, Bill. That was the big gimmick.
Misplaced comma.
That is just pure genius.
Now, this one.
How'd you come on that? Well, you know.
I don't know.
You pick him out of the air and God gives him to you, right?
I guess so. Now,
terrific
this one. Terrific
song.
I didn't write the. Remember, I didn't write the original Spiders and Snakes. I did a rewrite on it. And I wrote some of this one.
Did you have to give a portion to that guy for that?
Oh, sure.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I just want to know before I give you my big hit songs that are hitting here.
You have to really try to figure out. I mean, I've gotten, I think this one, I changed some things around. I think I got 25 points and the guy got 75 points. And the guy's name was Don Bowman, who was a talented country guy. He wrote the original Wildwood Weedon. Flower grew wild on the farm. We never know what it's called. Some said flower and some said weed, and I never really gave it much thought. One day I was out there talking to my brother, reached down for weed to chew on. Things got fuzzy and things got blurry, and then everything is gone. All good things gotta come to an end. It's the same with the wildwood weeds. One day a fella from Washington come by, spied him turn white as a sheet. He dug and he burned and he burned and he dug till he killed our cute little weeds. Then he drove away. We just smiled and waved, sitting there on that sack of seeds. Y'all come back now, you hear?
It's just so apropos for that time, you know?
Yeah, I think that says a lot about what really happened. It was the right time for something silly like
and
that.
And then Cowgirl Patty, that of course wasn't involved with some motion picture.
Any Which Way You Can.
Oh, with the Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood.
Did you get to meet him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was, had a small part in the movie. I got to do that. I also wrote three of the songs for The Fox and the Hound.
Really?
For and that was the last, the last animated, hand-drawn animated cartoon that the great old guard did. That was their last one. And I'm talking about the guys that worked on Snow White.
Yeah, The Fox and the Hound.
Yeah, that was the last one.
I didn't like that. I didn't know that.
And so I got to hang with those guys and spend some time with them. And one of them, I think it was Ollie Johnston, I believe that was the one, said to me, he said, you know, I had a friend that said he was going to do a puppet show. He said that he needed a, could I draw him a puppet? And so he said, I did. I didn't think a thing about it. He said, I was home one afternoon watching a television, and there was my character that I drew for this guy, Howdy Doody.
Oh, really?
Howdy Doody's a Disney character.
Yeah, I used to grow. I grew up watching Howdy Doody.
You, me too. I liked it. I loved Howdy Doody. Yeah.
So, how's your life these days?
Very good. Very good. I'm living back in Florida. Working on projects, things that I've wanted to do. The thing we talked about, some of it, the YouTube stuff. I'm just like the kids. I think it's great. You know,
and get you're on close there. Proximity to Disney here.
Yeah, close proximity to Disney, and I'm doing shows. I just worked the Florida Folk Festival. I'm doing that big art show over in Mount Dora. That's coming up.
Mount Dora. It's a great little town.
Mm-hmm, I'm doing Ruth Eckert Hall. And that's over in Clearwater. The last time I was there, I drew 1,800 people. I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
And so I'm playing, you know, I've gone down to the corner bar and played, you know. So it doesn't matter to me. You know, I love to play. And I'm curious about all these little listening rooms that are popping up all over the place. We used to call them coffee houses.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just trying to do the things that I enjoy doing, that I like to do. I'm a lucky guy.
You're happy that it all has come down so far the way it's come down?
Yeah, I got no complaints. No complaints. I was very, very, very fortunate this whole thing with me, as far as being out there and doing stuff, started when I was 12 years old, and it's still going on. It's still happening.
Advice for somebody. And it doesn't. I could say some young person will say, "Heck, there's, you know, been Grandma Moses didn't begin painting until she was 78." Yeah. But advice for somebody who has a dream out there.
Yeah, I have advice. I have good advice. I think if you're a player and you want to try to make a living, you want to try to give up your day job, whatever, you know, here's something that you may not want to hear, but it is the truth. If you're going to perform someplace, what you say is just as important as what you play.
Really?
Yeah. If you're a singer, same thing.
What do you mean?
I mean, sit down and think about it. Write it out. Look at it. Don't go, made up a song the other day. I hope you like it. Don't do that. Don't do that. And the reason I say that is because the more you can personalize what you're talking about, the more you can set up that song properly, or tell that story that gives them a little something about you.
It's a gift.
It's just as important as just saying, no, my music speaks for me. Well, sometimes your music, sometimes you speak for your music, and that's okay. But a lot of people don't take the time to think about presentation. Presentation's very, very important. You know, you keep moving forward in the band, closer to the microphone, the more you think about presentation. And I sincerely mean that. And if you're out there and you're a little bit shy, plan what you want to do. Think a lot about it. And don't worry too much about talking, but just think about what you want to do. And a good place to start is to have a little dinner party. Invite your friends over and entertain them and see how you feel about it. That way you're not putting too much at risk. And I'll give you another piece of advice that might really help you. If you're thinking about doing comedy and you're a little afraid that nobody's going to laugh or whatever, try this. If you're a guitarist or a piano player or whatever, if you're in a lounge or a bar or a restaurant, that type of thing, tell your audience that sometimes people, and this happens, so you're not really telling them a story, tell them that sometimes people will have a special event and they will say it's their birthday or anniversary or whatever. A lot of times they'll write it on a cocktail napkin, and the waitress will drop by with it and give it to the person who's performing there, making the music for that evening. Well, I think it's okay to find some stories that you really like, just a cute little things or little sayings or a little joke or anything that you find amusing, and say to the audience, I collect these cocktail napkins, and I'd like to read a few of them to you because I think they're fun. And read a few of them, and you will find that you're comfortable doing that because you have disconnected yourself from responsibility. Mm-hmm. You're telling somebody else's story. It's okay if they don't laugh.
Yeah.
And that's a good way to sneak into comedy.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, final two questions. Is there the most influential book? I know it's sort of obligatory to say the Bible, but hopefully that's included. So we can say the top two books that have influenced you. And you've had entree, which most people don't get to have. I mean, from Glenn Campbell staying at your house, or you staying at his house, or Chet Atkins, or all these famous people. I mean, who are you really appreciative that you got a chance to meet because your fame?
Oh, because I met somebody.
Yeah. Who out there?
Of course, Glenn.
And it doesn't have to be somebody famous.
Yeah. I felt real fortunate to get to know Nato Lemo, who recorded under the name of Los Andios Tavajares. They had a top 10 record in the 60s, 68, I think it was, called Maria Elena, a brilliant classical guitar player who was a savage in the jungle. And civilization caught up with him and his brother, and they fell in love with guitar music. And so he comes at life. He comes at life as a guy who didn't even know what clothing was. You know, he was just out in the jungle. And his take on everything was very spiritual and very appreciative every day and grateful every day. And like I would say, so when you have to go back to New York City, he lived up there, and he would say, here, home.
Oh, wherever he is?
Home is where you are. Yeah. So he thought like that. I really liked him. And I really liked Chet Atkins. I really, really liked Chet. He was a wise man, a great man. And so I've met some of these people that I'm very – but like you say, there's a – you know, the guy across the street from me when I was growing up in Eloise, his name's Lewis Wayne Simmons. Everybody called him Pud. We learned to play guitar together when 12 years old. And, you know, we'd listen to Chet Atkins and we'd just marvel at how this guy could play. And Pud wrote this, and Chet recorded it. Pud, my neighbor. He said she was standing in the closet when my wife walked out on me, but she was right there by my side on my way to Tennessee, and her body is bruised and covered with scars from being laid down in the back seat of too many strangers' cars. He's talking about his guitar.
Yeah.
And so it was nice knowing Pud too. Yeah. My buddy and started playing when I did when we were 12. And, you know, that's a smart song right there. It just creeps up on you real nice. That's just good writing, in my opinion. So I don't even know how I could, you know, I thought it was rewarding to meet you today. I've enjoyed it.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed meeting you too. And any book that's influenced you in a great, profound way?
Oh, gosh. I have two biographies that I've read over and over. And the guys, they both could be the same guy. And that's Walt Disney and Steve Jobs.
Ah.
Both visionaries, not particularly nice people. But
did you get to meet them both?
To meet either one of them.
No.
But as far as books go, I just love how they insisted on elegance.
And now, what do you mean they insist on it? Because obviously
it wasn't enough to have something be good. It needed to have a special kind of.
Like the iPhone is so sexy, or the iPad.
Well, yes. I mean, it the design of that stuff is just breathtaking. And Walt Disney demanded the same thing of his characters and his music. And at one time there was a lady who the older fellas women didn't do the work on in these things. They were cell painters. They painted the individual cells for the cartoons and stuff. But they didn't have any women. They were all men.
All men's voices.
But there was
Mickey Mouse, you know?
But there was one woman.
Yeah.
Who was a layout artist who drew backgrounds. And if you want to take a look sometime at Sleeping Beauty, you'll see that the layouts on that don't look like anything that Walt ever did. They are surreal and spectacular. And a lady did that. So Pepsi-Cola calls Walt Disney and says, look, we want to be in the World's Fair. We've only got 9 months to put something together. Can you help us out? Walt said, yeah, but I want you to pay me, then I want to keep it after the World's Fair. And so they said, okay. And so he calls this woman. He says, 9 months from today, we have to have an attraction at the World's Fair. Can you do it? And he turned the whole thing over to this woman. And
that was what?
It's a small world.
No.
Yeah. And so he goes into the
world.
So he goes into the Sherman Brothers, right? With the same day. He walks into their office. He says, we've got to have a song for this. And I want you to think of something all the guys, I mean, all the kids can sing. I want you to write something all the kids can sing to those, the guys that wrote Shim Shimony and all those great songs from, you know, Mary Poppins and whatever. And they said, what do you mean a song for all the kids in the world? He said, yeah. And they said, how can we do that? He said, because it's a small world after all. And he walked out.
Amazing.
Steve Jobs did that same kind of thing when they chased him out of the office when he got hired back. They chased him out of the room that they were building the Lisa, trying to create the Lisa machine, which failed. And then he went into another little office down the hall. And there was two guys in there with a little bitty computer. And he said, what's that? And they said, well, it's a Macintosh. We're trying to get it on its feet. And, and nobody was interested in the project. So they said, had two guys working on it. So he was watching them move the arrows, around on the screen to get to the different words and all. And he says, you need something to like a little pointer thing on there, you know, so it'd be easier. And the guy says, well, we're doing the arrows, arrow to the right, arrow to the left, up and down. He said, no, you need a little thing that you can move around on the desktop, and it'll make that arrow that you need move around on the screen. He said that. Right off the top of his head, he invented the mouse.
Wow.
So,
and one nice thing, if you saw the Lost Interview with Steve Jobs, I don't know if you've seen that. It's available on the internet.
Netflix.
Yes. And I rented that. You could tell it was never about the money.
Mm-mm.
And it is never about the money with greatness, is it?
No. He lived in a neighborhood. He had no special security. And he never locked his door, almost never locked his door. And he wanted his kids to be raised in a neighborhood with everybody else.
And he changed the world.
Yeah, he stopped. And he didn't want the money after the first $7
billion. Jim Stafford, great to meet you. And you've been a great influence on my life. So I'm honored to meet you. And I think you'd be surprised how many lives you've influenced with your intellect, your music, your levity, your humor. And may God speed and continue on.
Well, thank you, and frankly, Rhett, I'm not going to say it.
Who loves you, baby?
Okay, my man.